Chapter 6. Want of universality in the knowledge and reception of Christianity, and of greater clearness in the evidence, or a revelation which really came from God, the proof, it has been said, would in all ages be so public and manifest that no part of the human species would remain ignorant of it, no understanding could fail of being convinced by it. The advocates of Christianity do not pretend that the evidence of their religion possesses these qualities. They do not deny that we can conceive it to be within the compass of divine power to have communicated to the world a higher degree of assurance, and to have given to his communication a stronger and more extensive influence. For anything we are able to discern, God could have so formed men as to have perceived the truths of religion intuitively, or to have carried on a communication with the other world whilst they lived in this, or to have seen the individuals of the species, instead of dying, pass to heaven by a sensible translation. He could have presented a separate miracle to each man's senses. He could have established a standing miracle. He could have caused miracles to be wrought in every different age and country. These and many more methods, which we may imagine if we once give loose to our imaginations, are, so far as we can judge, all practicable. The question, therefore, is not whether Christianity possesses the highest possible degree of evidence, but whether the not having more evidence be a sufficient reason for rejecting that which we have. Now, there appears to be no fairer method of judging concerning any dispensation which is alleged to come from God, when question is made whether such a dispensation could come from God or not, than by comparing it with other things which are acknowledged to proceed from the same counsel, and to be produced by the same agency. If the dispensation in question labor under no defects, but what apparently belong to other dispensations, these seeming defects do not justify us in setting aside the proofs which are offered of its authenticity, if they be otherwise entitled to credit. Throughout that order, then, of nature, of which God is the author, what we find is a system of beneficence. We are seldom or never able to make out a system of optimism. I mean that there are few cases in which, if we permit ourselves to range in possibilities, we cannot suppose something more perfect and more unobjectionable than what we see. The rain which descends from heaven is confessedly amongst the contrivances of the Creator for the sustentation of the animals and vegetables which subsist upon the surface of the earth. Yet how partially and irregularly is it supplied? How much of it falls upon sea, where it can be of no use? How often is it wanted where it would be of the greatest? What tracts of continent are rendered deserts by the scarcity of it? Or, not to speak of extreme cases, how much sometimes do inhabited countries suffer by its deficiency or delay? We could imagine, if to imagine were our business, the matter to be otherwise regulated. We could imagine showers to fall just where and when they would do good, always seasonable, everywhere sufficient, so distributed as not to leave a field upon the face of the globe scorched by drought, or even a plant withering for the lack of moisture. Yet, does the difference between the real case and the imagined case, or the seeming inferiority of the one to the other, authorize us to say that the present disposition of the atmosphere is not amongst the productions or the designs of the Deity? Does it check the inference which we draw from the confessed beneficence of the provision? Or does it make us cease to admire the contrivance? The observation which we have exemplified in the single instance of the rain of heaven may be repeated concerning most of the phenomena of nature, and the true conclusion to which it leads is this, that to inquire what the Deity might have done, could have done, or, as we even sometimes presume to speak, ought to have done, or, in hypothetical cases, would have done, and to build any propositions upon such inquiries against evidence of facts, is wholly unwarrantable. It is a mode of reasoning which will not do in natural history, which will not do in natural religion, which cannot therefore be applied with safety to revelation. It may have same foundation in certain speculative a priori ideas of the divine attributes, but it has none in experience or in analogy. The general character of the works of nature is, on the one hand, goodness both in design and effect, and, on the other hand, a liability to difficulty and to objections, if such objections be allowed, by reason of seeming incompleteness or uncertainty in attaining their end. Christianity participates of this character. The true similitude between nature and revelation consists in this, that they each bear strong marks of their original, that they each also bear appearances of irregularity and defect. A system of strict optimism may nevertheless be the real system in both cases. But what I contend is that the proof is hidden from us, that we ought not to expect to perceive that in revelation which we hardly perceive in anything, that beneficence, of which we can judge, ought to satisfy us that optimism, of which we cannot judge, ought not to be sought after. We can judge of beneficence because it depends upon effects which we experience and upon the relation between the means which we see acting and the ends which we see produced. We cannot judge of optimism because it necessarily implies a comparison of that which is tried with that which is not tried, of consequences which we see with others which we imagine, and concerning many of which, it is more than probable, we know nothing, concerning some that we have no notion. If Christianity be compared with the state and progress of natural religion, the argument of the objector will gain nothing by the comparison. I remember hearing an unbeliever say that if God had given a revelation, he would have written it in the skies. Are the truths of natural religion written in the skies or in a language which everyone reads? Or is this the case with the most useful arts or the most necessary sciences of human life? An Otaheitian or an Eskimo knows nothing of Christianity. Does he know more of the principles of deism or morality, which, notwithstanding his ignorance, are neither untrue, nor unimportant, nor uncertain? The existence of deity is left to be collected from observations which every man does not make, which every man perhaps is not capable of making. Can it be argued that God does not exist because if he did, he would let us see him or discover himself to mankind by proofs, such as we may think the nature of the subject merited, which no inadvertency could miss, no prejudice withstand? If Christianity be regarded as a providential instrument, the amelioration of mankind, its progress and diffusion, that of other causes by which human life is improved, diversity is not greater, nor the advance more slow, in than we find it to be in learning, liberty, government, laws. The deity hath not touched the order of nature in vain. The Jewish religion produced great and permanent effects. The Christian religion hath done the same. It hath disposed the world to amendment. It hath put things in a train. It is by no means improbable that it may become universal, and that the world may continue in that stage, so long as that the duration of its reign may bear a vast proportion to the time of its partial influence. When we argue concerning Christianity that it must necessarily be true because it is beneficial, we go perhaps too far on one side, and we certainly go too far on the other when we conclude that it must be false because it is not so efficacious as we could have supposed. The question of its truth is to be tried upon its proper evidence without deferring much to this sort of argument on either side. The evidence, as Bishop Butler hath rightly observed, depends upon the judgment we form of human conduct under given circumstances, of which it may be presumed that we know something. The objection stands upon the supposed conduct of the deity under relations with which we are not acquainted. What would be the real effect of that overpowering evidence which our adversaries require in a revelation it is difficult to tell? At least we must speak of it as of a dispensation which we have no experience. Some consequences, however, would, it is probable, attend this economy which do not seem to befit a revelation that proceeded from God. One is that irresistible proof would restrain the voluntary powers too much, would not answer the purpose of trial and probation, would call for no exercise of candor, seriousness, humility, inquiry, no submission of passion, interests, and prejudices to moral evidence and to probable truth, no habits of reflection, none of that previous desire to learn and to obey the will of God, which forms perhaps the test of the virtuous principle, and which induces men to attend with care and reverence to every credible intimation of that will, and to resign present advantages and present pleasures to every reasonable expectation of propitiating his favor. Men's moral probation may be whether they will take due care to inform themselves by impartial consideration and afterwards whether they will act, as the case requires, upon the evidence which they have. And this we find by experience is often our probation in our temporal capacity. Butler's Analogy, Part 2, Chapter 6. 2. These modes of communication would leave no place for the admission of internal evidence, which ought perhaps to bear a considerable part in the proof of every revelation, because it is a species of evidence which applies itself to the knowledge, love, and practice of virtue, and which operates in proportion to the degree of those qualities which it finds in the person whom it addresses. Men of good dispositions amongst Christians are greatly affected by the impression which the Scriptures themselves make upon their minds. Their conviction is much strengthened by these impressions, and this, perhaps, was intended to be one effect to be produced by the religion. It is likewise true, to whatever cause we ascribe it, for I am not in this work at liberty to introduce the Christian doctrine of grace or assistance, or the Christian promise that, if any man will do his will, he shall know of the doctrine, whether it be of God. John 7:1, it is true, I say, that they who sincerely act, or sincerely endeavor to act, according to what they believe, that is, according to the just result of the probabilities, or, if you please, the possibilities in natural and revealed religion which they themselves perceive, and according to a rational estimate of consequences, and, above all, according to the just effect of those principles of gratitude and devotion which even the view of nature generates in a well-ordered mind, seldom fail of proceeding farther. This also may have been exactly what was designed, whereas, may it not be said that irresistible evidence would confound all characters and all dispositions, would subvert rather than promote the true purpose of the divine counsels, which is not to produce obedience by a force little short of mechanical constraint, which obedience would be regularity, not virtue, and would hardly perhaps differ from that which inanimate bodies pay to the laws impressed upon their nature, but to treat moral agents agreeably to what they are, which is done when light and motives are of such kinds and are imparted in such measures that the influence of them depends upon the recipients themselves. It is not meet to govern rational free agents in via by sight and sense. It would be no trial or thanks to the most sensual wretch to forbear sinning if heaven and hell were open to his sight. That spiritual vision and fruition is our state in patria. Baxter's Reasons, page 37. There may be truth in this thought, though roughly expressed. Few things are more improbable than that we, the human species, should be the highest order of beings in the universe, that animated nature should ascend from the lowest reptile to us, and all at once stop there. If there be classes above us of rational intelligences, clearer manifestations may belong to them. This may be one of the distinctions, and it may be one to which we ourselves hereafter shall attain. 3. But may it not also be asked whether the perfect display of a future state of existence would be compatible with the activity of civil life and with the success of human affairs? I can easily conceive that this impression may be overdone, that it may so seize and fill the thoughts as to leave no place for the cares and offices of men's several stations, no anxiety for worldly prosperity or even for a worldly provision, and by consequence, no sufficient stimulus to secular industry. Of the first Christians we read that all that believed were together and had all things common and sold their possessions and goods and parted them to all men as every man had need, and continuing daily with one accord in the temple and breaking bread from house to house, did eat their meat with gladness and singleness of heart. Acts 2.2, 44-46. This was extremely natural, and just what might be expected from miraculous evidence coming with full force upon the senses of mankind. But I much doubt whether, if this state of mind had been universal or long continued, the business of the world could have gone on. The necessary art of social life would have been little cultivated. The plow and the loom would have stood still. Agriculture, manufactures, trade, and navigation would not, I think, have flourished. If they could have been exercised at all, men would have addicted themselves to contemplative and ascetic lives instead of lives of business and of useful industry. We observe that St. Paul found it necessary frequently to recall his converts to the ordinary labors and domestic duties of their condition, and to give them, in his own example, a lesson of contented application to their worldly employments. By the manner in which the religion is now proposed, a great portion of the human species is enabled, and of these multitudes of every generation are induced, to seek and effectuate their salvation through the medium of Christianity, without interruption of the prosperity or of the regular course of human affairs.